Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Can perfectionism hurt your health and even your relationships? Well, if you suffer from a particular type and it's called socially prescribed perfectionism, the answer could be yes, especially if you're young and if you're female. Well, to tell us more, I'm joined in the studio by GP and mental health specialist Dr. Harry Barry. And in our Limerick studio, I have Dr. Anne-Marie Craven from the Department of Psychology at the University of Limerick. Lovely to have you both with us again. Anne-Marie, I'm going to start with you because this term I use there, socially prescribed perfectionism, as opposed to regular perfectionism. Can you explain what that is, firstly?
Yeah, so perfectionism is a trait that involves three dimensions, and we'll be talking mostly about the third. But the first two are self-oriented and other-oriented perfectionism. So self-oriented involves being driven to achieve personal standards of perfection and achievement for yourself, while other-oriented perfectionism involves demanding that other people meet particular standards. And what we're talking mostly about today is this idea of socially prescribed perfectionism, which is where people have a general perception that others in wider society demand perfection of you and that you feel under pressure to meet these demands for perfection. And it's thought to be quite a stable personality dimension that reflects a sort of general view. So it's not that you think just one person, maybe your line manager, is expecting a perfect piece of work from you. It's that you, in general, expect that other people expect perfection of you.
Mm-hmm. So we have putting pressure on yourself, putting pressure on other people to be perfect. But what we're focused on today is feeling that you're under pressure from all of those external forces to be perfect. Is that what we're talking about?
That's basically it, yeah. And although, you know, it's very easy to label any personality trait or psychological experience as a public health concern, and that phrase would lose all meaning if we did that. But some researchers have raised concerns about socially prescribed perfectionism because it is on the rise based on the studies that have been done, and it's linked to different mental health issues that we're discussing today.
Okay, and Harry, there has been a rise in that particular form of perfectionism, especially amongst young females.
Yeah, I think the important thing is here that I view this very simply, is ordinary perfectionism, I'm putting pressure on myself.
Yeah.
And I'm regarding myself as a failure if I don't achieve it. And in social, I call it social perfection just for simplicity, that's basically where I'm allowing other people to set the standards. And of course, it was an inevitable occurrence that the minute we got the smartphone and social media platforms, particularly Instagram, with filters and Snapchat with filters, it was inevitable that a particular group of people would be at risk. And that would be adolescent girls. Mm-hmm. Girls, say, between the ages of, say, 10 and 18, you know, 11, 18, 13, 18. And that's inevitable because that's a part of, it's a normal part of adolescent development for girls that they would compare particularly their appearance amongst each other.
So that was always the case.
That's been there since time immemorial. But what has changed completely is the ability now to put oneself out there online and to alter and filter so that I seem to have this perfect body image or this perfect face, and then compare that, you know, false picture with the almost myriads of other false images coming at me where other people have been filtering and doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if I'm a social perfectionist, no matter what I do, I'm never going to achieve the demands that I believe that other people are putting on me. So I believe that other people expect me to be absolutely perfect. So I get increasingly anxious. And really, really very important, the emotion that's missed all the time here is shame. So I'm not only just anxious about, you know, but I'm also very embarrassed or ashamed. Do you know what I mean? Because I feel, you know, I'm just not matching up to what other people think I should be matching up
to. Right, and I might never post a picture because I'm ashamed and embarrassed.
And now go down this wormhole, you know what I mean? So what's actually happening is we're seeing an increasing concern in the mental health area, which is my obviously interest. Because the more that I demand perfection, you know, or in the sense that other people want me to be perfect, the more anxious I become, the more ashamed I become, then the more likely I am to suffer from more extreme forms of anxiety, depression, eating disorders, which we might come to later, and more serious concerns. Mm-hmm. So this is not just a question of it's a kind of a fad.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? There are consequences to this.
Yeah, and very serious consequences, as you've outlined there. So, Anne-Marie, are there certain people who are more vulnerable to this, who will believe that everyone else is constantly judging them in a negative way, judging them negatively?
Well, there's a lot of evidence that the perfectionism is on the rise, and certainly people who are maybe more impressionable or who are more vulnerable as adolescents are, might be more vulnerable to internalizing these messages of perfection. And I think that's a word that's really important here, is that when you perceive that other people expect perfection of you, some people might not internalize this message. They mightn't take it in on themselves, and they mightn't take it upon themselves to meet these standards. But some people will. And where you do, then you are more at risk of mental health challenges. So if you're someone who sees that there are societal standards for appearance, performance, sporting performance, whatever domain of life that is, if you see that, but you're not taking it in on yourself, then you're okay. But when you are a vulnerable group, as children and adolescents are, and you do internalize that, then that's where we might see more problems. And that's probably why we see perfectionism overlap with issues like eating disorders, for example. Mm-hmm.
And you both mentioned eating disorders, and this is at the very serious end of this,
along with
self-harm too,
which
can, Harry, be a consequence of people feeling they need to be perfect?
The reality is that there's been an explosion in self-harm amongst young girls, and we actually don't know the figures. They're so big that they're actually beyond our capacity to actually even measure. Girls, when they get distressed, the commonest way of self-harming is cutting themselves, and often cutting themselves in places that parents don't even recognise, you know. But the eating disorder is the one that probably gives me the greatest concern, because if I believe foolishly that, you know, my appearance is related to how thin I am, then I'm going down a very dark wormhole, because the second I feed that into my social media sites, the bots take over, and they then start to shunt more and more anorexia type sites towards you. And suddenly you find yourself moving even from social perfectionism now into a very serious world, you know what I mean, in terms of eating disorders. Mm-hmm. And I believe, you know, that we are sleepwalking as a society, as parents, you know, as teachers, but particularly young people, we're all sleepwalking into this nightmare that's coming down the track, because this is gradually increasing all the time. Social perfection has to be distinguished from routine perfection, which I actually think we should come back and revisit another time, because that actually affects a whole lot of us.
Right, it's this is expecting yourself to be putting the pressure
on
yourself.
And that is an equal male-female thing, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's not just, whereas this is very much a female-driven phenomena. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This rise in social perfectionism. But this is one that I would really, I think we need to kind of put a marker down here and say, no, we can see this happening in front of our eyes. Are we going to wait till this becomes a serious problem, do you know what I mean, before we start intervening?
Right. Well, at least there's talk about regulating now when it comes to the online
absolutely.
Space, because it, up to now has been, you know, all on parents,
wild
really,
west.
To mitigate against what's happening. Just going back to people who are vulnerable to this, is it the case that people who exhibit these perfectionist traits can experience parental burnout, Anne-Marie, and also lower social support? And how are those things related to perfectionism and socially prescribed perfectionism?
Yeah, so while Harry's pointed out that risk for adolescent girls who are already at risk of developing, you know, internalizing issues around mental health anyway, but of course, perfectionism and social perfectionism, these are traits that everybody experiences in some degree or other. And people who are higher on that trait would experience higher levels of psychological distress. Parents who are higher on that trait are more likely to report parental burnout. And that's not too surprising, because there's no perfect way, right, of being a parent. And good enough parenting is absolutely fine and probably what we should be striving for. But if you are perfectionistic and you're trying to get parenting just right, we all know that every day that won't go to plan. So it's no surprise to see burnout in people who have those high tendencies. Mm-hmm. And also people who have high scores on perfectionism and social perfectionism, they would have lower social support from people in their network. And this is likely because when you are reluctant or worried about disclosing imperfections or stresses to others in your life, maybe you didn't get the grade you expected on something, maybe a task didn't go to plan, maybe you failed in some other way. And if you don't disclose that to other people in your network, it's really hard to access the support you need to cope with those disappointments. And you don't have someone who will put it in perspective for you and say, well, you know, that happened to me last week as well, or this is only one test, there's plenty more to come, it doesn't determine everything. So people who have relatively higher scores on that trait are that little bit more vulnerable to a range of different outcomes.
Okay,
as well.
And the negative thinking patterns then, Harry, that are associated with this trait, will you take us through some of them?
Yeah, I think what's very important is, why is this damaging? Because it affects both our thinking and our behaviour. So it's interesting to examine both. So we look at the kind of negative thoughts, you know, others must believe that my the online images I'm presenting are perfect. Others may judge my online images negatively and have to accept their judgment. A really important one, I must have the perfect body image. If I don't, I'm a failure. So there's both an internalizing, I totally agree with Anne-Marie here, there's a huge internalizing that it's not only other people think I'm a failure, but I'm anxious because I believe I'm a failure. Mm-hmm. So if I'm not sending up the perfect images, etc. And I think the behavioural part is the part that we're kind of missing, really. That think about the amount of time that I have to spend and the energy I have to spend to keep this perfect image going, not just online, but in general. And so that means lack of sleep, overuse of social media platforms, excessive use of filters, excessive checking of other images, trawling inappropriate sites. It's exhausting and it's dangerous. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, well, can you tell me about the qualities that a young person might have who looks at those images and doesn't absorb any of this and can walk away and throw the phone there and go out and play a game of football?
Well, I think Anne-Marie put her finger on it completely. Like, when I'm talking to people, I talk all the time about the concept of rational and irrational beliefs, ways of thinking about the world that are sensible and ways that are not sensible. And for some people, they're not vulnerable in this area. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't bother them. So you don't like my thing, who cares? Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't bother me. I'm not internalizing it.
And is that nature or nurture?
That's a kind of a...
I think it's both.
It's probably a bit of both. I agree with Anne-Marie. It's a little bit of both. We can often pick it up from our parents. Do you know what I mean? We can pick it up from friends. We can pick it up from other siblings, etc. But there is definitely a certain a nature part to it. We are predetermined to a certain extent.
Yeah, come in there, Anne-Marie, on
that. The nurture point is where we can do something about that, though. So obviously we've talked about the exposure to lots of targets for comparison on social media and lots of messages on social media. But, you know, they don't spend all their time on social media, adolescents. They do spend some time in phone-free zones or with peers. So I think the messaging at home is important, that we value you for who you are, and we're not, our love for you is not conditional on achieving a particular grade. We're not making many, many comments about your appearance or your food intake, for example. We'll talk about healthy eating, but we won't talk too much about quantity, maybe, of food. So our choice of language is important, because we might unintentionally give messages that don't have the right effect. So that's one thing we can do. And I think adolescents who are sensible about social media use, and it's very hard to be, if there are hobbies or interests or anything that displaces that time, if there's anything in their lives that's incompatible with time comparing yourself to somebody else, I think that can only be a good thing.
Keep them busy.
Keep them doing things that are good for them. And that sort of balances out the exposure to other issues.
Harry, you want to come in there?
Yeah, I think, you know, there are some definite things that we can do coming down the track. One is the challenging of social media. And the other, in my opinion, would be in parents and schools. They would be the three areas that I'd look at. I think we have, obviously, the ban is hopefully coming in. And governments, may I make one plea that all schools would be given a grant to have lockers for phones. That's a plea from me on behalf of some principals. I think there must be proper regulation of the platforms. We have to do it. Smartphones should not be given to these kids. I love the idea of the Barbie phone, the flip phone.
It's coming in
America, the Barbie phone. Love that idea. I think it's great. I think the idea of increasing the age of access to 16 is an excellent one, by the way.
To social media platforms.
That, to me, would be massive. If we could get that through. And all parents making sure that they don't look at things after 10:30 at night. But the big one for for me would be I'd love to see schools getting young girls in small groups together and feeding in this information to them. And honestly, getting them to kind of explore, and I call it interrogate the information that they're getting, and get them to problem solve the theory themselves. So mm-hmm. What do they think we should do? Because they're the ones that are being affected by it, and they're the ones we need to be hearing more and more from. So I'm hugely in favour of giving the problem back to the kids themselves and say, right, what do you think we should do?
Pull it
apart, interrogate it.
All right, listen, we do need to leave it there, but Harry and Anne-Marie, it's always lovely to talk to you both, Dr. Harry Barry and Dr. Anne-Marie Crabb.